listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. Good afternoon. You're listening to KYRS. You're also listening to Praxis. I'm your host, Taylor, and today I'm doing an Election Day special. It's the day before Election Day, as you're probably painfully aware by now. And I am going to split the show today. And in the first hour, I'm bringing back a former guest who is now a candidate, Jessa Lewis. Hey.
Good to see you again.
Yeah, and you may have heard her very recently on the station, on FYES, and also on the news. So, yeah, welcome back.
It's good to be here.
Yeah. And so just a reminder, I guess, for people who haven't been fanatically listening to every episode for the last 2 to 3 years, you were on a couple years back now when you were a delegate for Bernie Sanders.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And was that kind of your first foray into organized politics? I'm trying to remember. If you just want to tell me your political story, I guess.
I mean, how far back do you want to go? Do you want to go back to when I was an evangelical Republican?
Yeah, let's start there. That's a great place to start.
No, I mean, I grew up here, you know, and in Eastern Washington, you know, we've got some libertarian streaks, we're conservative. But after, you know, real life experience, I really started to understand the value of the social safety net and why there are certain policies in place as a single mom. And you know, it's hard to pull yourself up by your bootstraps when you don't have any boots. And I think we've got a mutual responsibility to one another. And that's what started me on my journey to being more involved in politics and becoming a Democrat. And so I've been behind the scenes working on policy, it be it alternative energy, tribal issues. And most recently, after the Sanders or after the 2016 election, I was involved in the fight for universal health care in Olympia. We were half a dozen votes shy of a bipartisan bill. And it turned out that my conservative background put me in the perfect position to speak across the aisle and to get support. And we were able to get 8 votes lined up, but we weren't able to get all the way. And so that's why I'm running to finish a job.
Great. So you're running for state senate in the 6th LD.
Yes, here. In the 6th. For those of you who aren't looking on a map, it's Country Homes, North Spokane, 5 Mile, wraps around the West Plains, picks up Cheney, Airway Heights, Medical Lake, and then gets to South Hill, basically 29th south to the northern end of the Palouse Highway, or the Palouse.
So it's kind of a C around the west.
Or a claw.
Of town. A claw. There you
go. Because it's got a bit of an arm.
Okay, yeah. So what went into your decision to run, to kind of step it up from working in the background to putting yourself out there as a candidate?
Honestly, it was a frustration of seeing what's happened with the political discourse, that it's not necessarily about what real people actually care about. And that was one of the frustrations with the 2016 election, was it wasn't about the issues. And even just seeing the increased polarization, because once you get beyond the language barriers, we actually agree on the majority of things. We want our kids to be safe. We want to be able to retire with dignity. We want to be able to work at a job that pays the bills. Those things aren't partisan. But what we've done is gotten caught up in these issues that are hyper-polarizing, and that is causing us to basically be ground to a standstill. And it doesn't help our communities. It doesn't fix our roads. It doesn't build our schools. And it was the frustration with the status quo that inspired me to jump in.
Cool. And I guess, how's it been? I mean, you're probably, it's the day before the election. It's the final countdown, as we were singing before we came on the air.
Guilty.
Yeah. So how has it played out for you? Like, what has the experience been like?
I would say, you know, I apologize to and appreciate my family for putting up with this. It's been hard on my daughter because it is a large time demand and energy demand, and there's usually not a lot left to go around. But I'd also say it is the most rewarding thing I have ever been a part of, other than being a mom, especially when you get to connect with people one-on-one, hear their dreams, their concerns. People are investing their hopes for the future in you, and that is such an absolute honor, and it's something worth fighting for.
Yeah. And so I guess you're out there canvassing based on just like seeing you on social media. You're out there canvassing a lot yourself. It's a small team, it seems like, of dedicated folks. Are you encountering a lot of other people who are like you in the sense that they might have a conservative background, but they've shifted over time?
Absolutely. Or there's people that are lost right now that are finding the messages that they're hearing from neither side represent them. And I think there's a frustration, and that's why we've seen until this year record low turnout. You know, turnout's been dropping. If people who didn't vote was a political party, they would have won the presidential election by a landslide, because we're not talking about issues that actual people are concerned about. And I think that when you connect on a real level on kitchen table issues, you're able to sway the majority of people, and it doesn't matter what they currently identify as.
Yeah. And what are some of those issues, like, on the state level that people are most kind of switched on about right now in your...
It depends on the area. In the West Plains, there's concerns about water security, about the roads, that kids are having to get on a bus from Airway Heights in order to go to Cheney to go to school. You know, so there's need for more just schools and basic infrastructure investment. In downtown Cheney, there's storefronts that have been vacant for 15 years. You're hearing kind of across the board that people don't want their kids to have to leave to find economic opportunity. And then, of course, there's always the complaints about broadband and the fact that even if you're on the South Hill or in Cheney or in various areas, that the internet connection isn't where it needs to be. And we can do better as a community. So I think those are some of the main issues that have been coming up. But then there's also criminal justice reform, resiliency in a time of climate change. You can really start diving into some of the issues there as well.
That's the kind of stuff that I feel like, as you pointed out, doesn't ever surface even in debates and in mainstream coverage, because it's not exciting or divisive to talk about having good broadband speed, right?
Absolutely. And even if we're talking about the economy, that is a hard issue to win on, because taxes are so complex, the economy is complex, and you're not able to easily whittle those down to talking points. So instead they'll go to, they're going to take your guns, or, you know, so things like that are not the case at all, but it gets people riled up and, is a distraction. And I think ultimately is a disservice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And on the gun front, something I noticed a couple weeks ago, which I'm sure you noticed also, when the Spokesman Review put out their endorsements, mm-hmm. They endorsed your opponent, Jeff Holy, and they appear to have, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but to have mischaracterized your platform.
Absolutely.
Pretty clearly. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, and I think that's easy to do when, you know, it's written by one person and I wasn't interviewed. You know, so I think it's easy to slip into inaccurate reporting when that's the case. They said I was anti-gun, which is absolutely not true. I have a concealed carry permit. My family hunts. And actually, you know, I would say the majority of Democrats I know in the area and I'm friends with hunt too. So it's not an anti thing by any means. And then I was also called pro-welfare, which I find is an amusing characterization. And I will absolutely take that charge if it means that I didn't want women and children to starve.
Seems like a reasonable, yeah, political platform. No starvation.
Yeah, but I mean, if we're to look at it, there's ways we can be more effective. I think it's a shame when people choose or are unable to take a job for fear that they'll lose their health care coverage when they're sick. I think it's a shame that we've got seniors skipping their meals in order to be able to afford medication. That we have a growing homeless population of students here in our city. There's things we absolutely need to address. And what's sad is when we don't make those early investments upstream, it ends up costing us more in taxpayer money down the road. So it's essentially saving money by not changing the oil on your car. And you do that long enough, you have catastrophic engine failure. And it's going to be really expensive to clean up the mess that was made by us not doing that early investment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And not to linger on the negative, but that endorsement was obviously just a mistake on their part in terms of, like, factual errors and, you know, I can't say too much about my own personal opinion as the neutral host of the show. But there was also a really misleading mailer that went out from your opponent. Can you talk about that a little bit, too?
We can. It seems to be the gift that's kept giving. As a result, a lot of attention was put on a race that wasn't put there previously. It showed kind of the desperation that, you know, if their polling is matching ours, like, things are really hopeful for tomorrow night. And please don't write in PCOTUS. He's endorsed and supported me. And I appreciate how quickly everyone that was involved in that mailer sent out a response. And actually, it helped us with volunteer recruitment and just general awareness about who I am and what I'm actually about.
Yeah. And like you said, it seems to be an indication that they're scared, and they obviously being kind of the Republican establishment that has been so silent to complicit in the rise of this extreme right ideology in our country. And we obviously have a lot of that in our region too, specifically. Mm-hmm. But what do you think just about the general pattern, like as a candidate in this, you know, this year of women candidates, the quote unquote blue wave, kind of what's your take on the broader moment right now?
For me, I've tried to stay away from the blue wave terminology because I'm more interested in building a ladder, and I'm not interested in fostering the us versus them dialogue and more of how can we work together. I'm proud of the fact I do have conservative roots. I still have the values I grew up with, and that means responsible spending, effective and smaller government that's not invading into your lives. So there's a lot of things to where I still have those early values, and I'm not seeing those values in the current Republican Party. And I would love to see them, and I appreciate, you know, I've got friends in the party who are working to try to bring the party back from the brink, from how extreme it's getting, and I hope they're successful in that work. You know, Teddy Roosevelt was an early hero of mine, and it's been hard watching the party, the Republican Party, morph into something I don't recognize anymore, that's not in line with, I would assume, American values and beliefs.
Yeah. Do you think that they'll be able to do that at this point?
I hope so. And, you know, and at the end of the day, I will work with anyone on an issue where we can find agreement. And I've had some great conversations with, you know, people who are currently elected who are Republican county officials, and I look forward to working with them. And I hope we're able to move the ball forward in that.
Yeah. And so in our previous conversation, when you were caucusing and then a delegate for Bernie Sanders, we talked a lot about the divide within the Democratic Party at that point. Do you think that the perceived and probably real urgency around countering the far right has smoothed that divide over within the Democratic Party? Or
I would say Washington State's probably better off than some of the states, but I still see issues in areas that are a majority Democrat because they can afford to be that way, you know, have the infighting, because you know, they'll at least have someone elected that isn't as extreme or supporting an extreme agenda right now. But as far as here in Eastern Washington, it's a little bit more all hands on deck and let's all work together. And I've appreciated the support I've gotten from, you know, even in spite of some of my progressive ideals, like I have pretty strong establishment support, and I appreciate that we're able to be unified right now.
Yeah, for sure. And what, I guess for people who don't know, because I think, you know, obviously we don't have civics education in our system.
And I think that's intentional.
Yeah. Yeah. I tend to agree. What can you just explain a little bit about what the state house looks like, as opposed to like the federal house, and like what kind of power you would theoretically have, what kind of things happen in Olympia as opposed to DC, just for listeners who might not know that?
Excellent. Well, I would say those are called down ballot races. So the state and county and city races, and they often get less coverage and less attention. And those are actually the things that are going to have, those are the races that are going to have the most dramatic the most dramatic impact on your life. So if you're concerned about how your school's funding is going to be, how your state's healthcare is going to be administered, basically the funding for the majority of the roads and all those other projects actually come from the state level. And if you haven't had a chance to lobby in Olympia and actually go there, I highly recommend it. There's lobby days for various groups to where you can kind of go en masse. They'll help guide you through the process, train you. I ran one of these for healthcare last session. So we actually help book appointments with your legislators, and you're able to go in and actually make your case, tell your stories. You've got 15 minutes, and it's amazing how impactful that time is to where you can really sway laws and opinion. And so I know it's a trip, and especially sometimes when the roads are not the best, but please, if you ever can, please do. And if not, please write letters, please call. Cause often, even if your legislator in Olympia agrees with you on that position, the fact that they've gotten that many calls can oftentimes give them the political backing and the support to hold the line when it comes to not compromising on their ideals, if they're getting maybe pressure from the caucus to do so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that seems to be what it comes down to. Cause in theory, you know, that's the idea of representation, right? Like, it's not about what their politics are as much as about who they're representing, in theory.
Absolutely. And that's what's frustrating, is when you have elected officials in Olympia who will take meetings with lobbyists and be very well known by those who have the capacity to write a big check, but then refuse to meet with their constituents. And that is something I've heard quite a bit on the doors. Either people didn't know who their representatives were, or had stories of how they were turned down a meeting. And I don't care who you are or where you are in the political spectrum, it is your representative's responsibility to at least give you a chance to have your say.
Yeah, definitely. And if you're just joining us this afternoon, you're listening to Praxis on KYRS. I'm talking with Jessa Lewis. She's candidate for state senate in the 6th LD here in kind of West Spokane, Cheney. A lot of our signal range, actually. And yeah, we're talking in the second half. I'm going to be talking with my friend Tim Harold about some more general election stuff. It's your last day to vote before the election. So get out there. If you haven't, you can still drop off that ballot at the libraries. You probably know more of the details than I do.
Well, actually, if you've lost your ballot, go to myvote.wa.gov or .gov, and you can enter in your information and print a replacement ballot, or you can go in person to the Spokane County Elections, which is by the courthouse, up until, I think it's 5 most days. Double check the website and see if they're open later tomorrow in order to accept those ballots.
Great. Yeah, because I know it can get mixed in with the mail, or I saw a photo today of someone whose child had drawn all over their security envelope.
There was a dog who actually ate someone's ballot. Saw a photo of that too.
Yeah. So it's not too late. Get out there. Do the thing that you need to do at this time. So I guess you've talked about some of your platform, but what do you most want people to know about you, just in terms of what you'd like to do representing this area?
I think all too often the people who end up being able to be elected in Olympia are people coming from a certain position of privilege. They're retired, or they're well enough off financially that they can take off a year in order to campaign. And so what's happened is our representatives in Olympia don't represent us. They tend to be better off and not understand the reality of day to day. So electing a single working mom who is younger than the average person representing New Olympia will mean that you actually have a voice and a seat at the table. And if you don't have a seat at the table, you're on the menu. And I think it'll be a lot harder for them to cut programs or support for students, for moms, for parents, if there's someone who's actually telling a personal story in that caucus chamber. So that's one thing I would push. And also, if you've not been involved in politics and this year's kind of gotten under your skin, please volunteer with a campaign, become involved in any of the local political parties or issue-based organizations, because we need you to become involved. It is not just a thing for people who are nerdy and political. It is for everybody and impacts all of us. Now is the time we need you.
Mm-hmm. And so you already talked about lobbying. If people don't want to run for office, right, and they want to do something more than vote once every 2 or worst case scenario 4 years, what else in terms of the political process would you point people to?
Absolutely support a candidate, support a candidate or an initiative. There's various organizations here in town that would love your support, such as Fuse. Candidates like myself, like even if you aren't comfortable talking to voters, having someone who will do your laundry or bring over food. I mean, there's like really basic things like my, it's amazing how hard it is to do the basic things when you're gone. And figuring out what your school needs, sometimes it's just the small volunteer things, but then it builds and you'll find your interest grow. So whatever is your pet issue that you're really concerned about, maybe it's fighting to clean up the Spokane River, whatever those things are, I think that's absolutely something that you should get involved in if you haven't been. And if you just say, okay, I'll give 5 hours a week to something, and you pick something different every week, and then you might end up finding something that is really rewarding and fulfilling.
Mm-hmm. And say someone does that for, 100 weeks, and by the end of it, they've found their thing and they decide they want to run for office. What would you, as someone running for office for the first time, tell them, tell someone who's listening who thinks, you know what, next round or city council next year, something like that, I want to throw my hat in the ring?
First, I would say absolutely volunteer for another campaign first. I think you don't really understand how much work it is and what you have to do until you've spent that time doing the work yourself. And that also helps introduce you to the right people and getting to kind of understand who are the players, what supports do you need. If you haven't done any sort of candidate training programs, look into it. I was a part of Emerge Washington, which trains women candidates. Then there's also the Progressive Campaign Change Committee, which did a training in D.C. that I went to. And this was started by Elizabeth Warren's team, I believe. And then I also did one with the State Labor Council, which was just a weekend. It was a shorter training. But from those, you get the tools of understanding, okay, here's how you do these things. Depending on the race, you may need to figure out, who you can ask from your friends and family to support you, because it does cost money to, make buttons and door knockers and those sort of things. But the other thing I'd advise is maybe start small. Washington State has more seats per capita than any other state in the nation. So that means there's fire and water commissioners, there's sewer commission districts, cemetery commissioner districts. So there's all these small little seats that you may not know about that will give you the experience. And then you'll know the process, and then it makes it a little easier when you go to level up for the next round. If you're interested and willing to be a part of party politics, there's called a precinct committee officer. So that means if for some reason a legislator steps down, you're actually the one that elects what the party stands for and who fills that seat. So both Republicans and Democrats have those roles.
And those are really small districts, right? Those are kind of like neighborhood.
Absolutely.
Wide. They're smaller than, say, like a city council district.
Yes. And oftentimes you just show up and you've got it. And so those are elected positions. You're certified, and you can be appointed to them if you don't sign up in time for that year. But it actually does give you a lot of power. So if you don't like where the party's heading, that gives you an opportunity to have a voice and a vote at the table. And it's really truly as whoever shows up.
Yeah. Case in point, in a negative sense, that's what James Alsup, our white supremacist guy down in Pullman, became a PCO for the Republicans, because it's as easy as showing up. So
he filed, no one else filed, and there's not really a mechanism to remove somebody.
Mm-hmm. So if that's not encouragement enough, I don't know what to tell you.
Or discouragement.
Encouragement for someone else to go for those seats. It's just in the last few minutes that we have. I don't know. What else do you want people to know? Or what else have you learned on this campaign journey?
To be okay with losing your anonymity. That's been, that's something to where I think that's, maybe not something people are prepared for. 'Cause when you go into public service, it really is public. The people are going to just come up to you and share their hopes and dreams and their fears and concerns, and that's such a huge responsibility and an honor, because people really will open up their hearts to you. And every time that happens, it's incredibly touching, and also makes me even more determined to pull this off for them, because I'm concerned about where we're heading as a country and as a community if we continue this fear and hatred and division.
Yeah. And not to amp up the pressure, you know, on this, the last day before Election Day, but how does it look pretty good. I mean, it's a pretty tight seat, like it's a pretty tight district and a race. But how is it looking for you based on the prognosticators out there?
As far as all the educated guesses go, it's up in the air, but we're hopeful. We've done everything we can do. We took a district that wasn't seen to be in play, had a double-digit swing in the primary. We've had an active ground game. I've got two phenomenal running mates who are working really hard in the district. There's all the energy around, you know, the congressional race. So I think almost everything we could have done, we've done. And now it's up to the voters to show up. And I hope you all do, because it matters so much.
Yeah. Cool. Well, and if people want to learn more about you at the 11th hour, where can they find you outside of like the voter's guide?
You can find me knocking on doors and cut across a couple lanes of traffic. That's happened a couple of times where people have literally pulled up next to me, or at the grocery store. But you can go to electjessalewis.com or find me on any of the various social media at electjessalewis. I'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions, feel free to email me at info@electjessalewis.com. And tell your friends, no matter what, just vote, get engaged. We need you right now.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for making time to talk with me. I hope you get to breathe a big sigh of relief tomorrow.
And me too. We may not find out till Friday, though. I mean, we are expecting record turnout. So we may beat the 2008 election numbers this year. And for a midterm, that's incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we won't play the final countdown then.
It's not the final countdown. Okay. We're going to be fighting for a couple days after, probably.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah. All right. If you're just joining us, I was just talking with Jessa Lewis. She's running for state senate in the 6th LD. I'm going to take a quick break and then be joined by Tim Harold. We're going to be talking a little more broadly about these very dramatic midterm elections. So stick with us. We'll be right back.
That's what Election Day is all about. The biggest gun we've got is called the ballot box. So if you don't like who's in there, vote them out. Vote them out.
Vote them out.
Vote them out.
Vote them out.
And when they're gone, we'll sing and dance and shout. And bring some new ones in, and we'll start that show again.
All right. Thanks, Uncle Willie Nelson, for that transition. Here on the second half of Praxis this afternoon, we're just talking with Jessa Lewis, and now I'm in the studio with my friend Tim Harold, who's one of my favorite people to nerd out politically with. Do you want to just introduce yourself a little bit, talk about who you are, what brings you here today?
Yeah, sure. I grew up here in Spokane, and I think the reason that like you and I talked about having a conversation here today is primarily because I'm a member of the Democratic Socialists of America. I helped establish the chapter here in Spokane, although I do need to clarify that I'm not here speaking officially as a press member, in as we call it, from the chapter, but I am a member of the national organization. I'm on a couple boards around town, and I like to nerd out about politics.
Yeah. Well, so, welcome. There's a lot to nerd out about this season. So I don't know where you'd like to start. I mean, there's all of these wild races around the country. Willie Nelson wrote that song. We were just playing Vote Him Out for Beto O'Rourke. whose name I can totally say down
in Texas. To the
shock
and surprise of Texas Republicans.
Yes, to the dismay of Texas Republicans. Taylor Swift in Tennessee and then Willie Nelson in Texas.
Right.
Everyone's very sad right now. But yeah, what's your favorite upset race anywhere in the country right now?
Favorite upset?
Or potential upset, I guess. We shouldn't count our chickens.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like, I guess for starters, like, you have to go with the local races. So, I mean, we all know that, like, we're obviously there's a lot of eyes here in the 5th on what happens tomorrow. Well, again, we won't necessarily know until Thanksgiving, but what happens with the 5th Congressional District. I think in Washington State alone, I forget the exact district, but it's Dave Reichert's empty seat. And that would be, you know, they've been gunning for that one for a while, and that would be a big flip. More nationally, probably, the 8th, yeah. I think at the national level, I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens with the two governorship races down in the Deep South. So Andrew Gillum is running what looks to be a fairly successful race in Florida, which would be a big flip, as we all know that Florida has cropped up many times in elections.
Florida's a little bit notorious.
A little bit. And
Gillum's also a former Bernie delegate.
He is, right. Yeah. And so I think that's one to keep your eyes on. And I think the other one that is rightly getting a lot of attention is the governorship race in Georgia, which will be Stacey Abrams running for governor against, I forget his first name, but Kemp.
I can't remember. Brian Kemp.
Which is kind of really testing the limits of our democratic process in this country, because he is, for anybody who doesn't know, he is currently the Attorney General.
Secretary of State, of
Georgia, which means that he's in charge of overseeing the election in which he is also running for governor. And so there, over the last 2 months, there have been several cases of, you know, huge voter purges. Typically, it's almost unprecedented that you don't step down if you're the Secretary of State and you're running for, you know, higher office in that state. You usually step down because you're essentially recusing yourself. But, you know, Stacey Abrams is a African American woman. There's a lot of African American votes, obviously, in Georgia. And it's, you know, a lot of observers are looking at this and saying this is truly harkening back to some Jim Crow era stuff.
Yeah, I think the number I heard is that something like 70% of the voters who have been purged from the rolls are African American, even though that's highly disproportionate to the population itself and to the registered population, the population who can vote in the first place. So, and the polling places, they have a lot more physical polling there. And the polling places they're closing just happen to be in those predominantly black areas.
Yeah.
So.
And they're doing things like, I mean, we here in Washington State, you know, I've been having conversations with plenty of people that are, you know, used to live in different states. They've moved here and they just like cannot believe how amazingly easy and simple it is to vote here. It took me a little bit. I used to like being able to like go down to the polling station, and it was kind of like a nice little tradition. But, you know, you get 2-3 weeks to sit there and pet your cat and drink coffee and read the ballot. And it's so civilized. Whereas, you know, the polar opposite is what's going on particularly in these deep South states. You know, they're not just closing polls. They're closing them on like opposite sides of rivers from where people live. You know, keeping them closed until, so it's going to be really interesting, because at the same time, I think you're seeing, you know, like the first guest justice said, like record turnout, including in places like Georgia. So, this is going to be a unique election. You really don't ever, I mean, in my lifetime, you've never ever seen, you know, anywhere near this turnout for a midterm.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, when it comes to the polls, you know, we obviously saw 2 years ago that the polls were a bit askew.
Yes.
But it's not, you know, this is going on not just in the United States. It's kind of going on all over the world. I mean, last year, to step out of American politics for a second, you know, there was what happened with Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party in the UK. You know, they were down something like 27 points, the Labour Party was in the polls before that, when that election was called. And they only have 4 weeks to have an election. And they ended up picking up something like 80 seats. The polls don't factor in. They can only factor in previous traditional turnout. So we don't, frankly, really know until tomorrow at all what this is really going to look like. You know?
Yeah. And on turnout, the other thing that's interesting is that so many places are trying to be more like Washington right now in different ways. I believe it's Oregon that just instituted automatic voter registration.
Yep.
You basically have to opt out of being registered, which is pretty amazing. I don't know if they're one of the only states that has that.
I believe we passed it, but it sets in. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that got accomplished in the session in Olympia this year.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it, I believe, went into effect this year, but a lot of it goes into effect next year.
Yeah.
So if you're 16 or 17 years old and you happen to be listening to this, like, you can, starting next year, you can pre-register to vote and it'll kick your registration into effect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you turn 18, we're doing automatic voter registration, and obviously we vote by mail. There's not a lot of states. I believe the only other state that does mail-in, apart from Washington, Oregon, I think is Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And anywhere else, there's sometimes options to do it, but it's not, you know, it's not just the way
that... It's not the automatic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other big thing on that, I mean, there's a lot of things, but the one that I'm most interested in, just on being interested in criminal justice reform in general and abolition, is in Florida also, where Gillum's running. They have an initiative on the ballot to reinstate voting rights to convicted felons.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a million people in Florida.
It's a huge deal.
That's, I mean, like, just the fact that a million people are disenfranchised from voting in Florida explains so much about Florida politics, first of all.
For sure.
And I'm sure if the timing of that were different, it would almost ensure victory for Gillum.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
so we'll see what happens with that as well.
And I think there's a lot of themes running through this election, and one of, you know, obviously the one people are focusing on the most is, like, this is a referendum on what has gone on in the last 2 years, you know, mostly at the presidential level, but really and also in Congress. But, you know, a lot of the sort of, you know, some of the more important bylines do have to do with, you know, what, you know, the capture of state legislatures by you know, Republicans, going back really to, I mean, it's really kicked off in 2010, and it's, you know, as the elections have gone on, you know, they've managed to get what are called trifectas in a lot of states, which means that they control both the House and the Senate in the state and the governorship, which means that, you know, if you are a party that, you know, doesn't want turnout, because if more people vote, you tend to do worse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your incentive, therefore, is to enact anti-democratic measures to keep as many people from voting as possible. And that's, I think, going to be really, you know, whatever happens tomorrow, you know, that is going to be playing a lot into the future of, you know, a functioning democracy in this country for the next foreseeable future. And you know, and the other big thing is, tied to that, that, you know, the census is in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever whenever there's a census that occurs, like, that's when all the redistricting happens, and that's done by state legislatures. So, you know, there's a lot in play right now that, you know, and in addition to, you know, what we talked about more, which is healthcare and, you know, tax cuts for the rich and all the rest. But, you know, that's, to me, like, that, those are systemic problems that absolutely need to be addressed and can be, but
mm-hmm.
you know, they're not as, you know, it's not as popular to talk about those things, even mm-hmm. though they might even have more of an effect in the long term.
Yeah, it's not flashy. That's what Jessa was saying, is these down ballot
right.
races and seats. It's just kind of people like, yeah, they probably don't do much.
Yeah.
And in fact, yeah. they do. And the other thing with the states that's interesting is, you know, I think we were talking a little while back about this idea that, you know, states' rights has been this like mm-hmm. bastion of the right forever, mm-hmm. you know, since supposedly that's what your history book might have told you the Civil War was about.
Yeah. I had a conservative in a bar tell me that that's his favorite amendment.
Oof.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's been kind of their purview. But I think now I've been reflecting on the fact that, you know, I live in Washington State and the Supreme Court has just got a lot worse than it already was. And if we're looking at things like abortion rights, mm-hmm. if we're looking at things like healthcare access more generally, unions, all these issues that might potentially go to the court, states' rights could swing in our favor.
Yeah. And it's kind of an untested water for, you know, that it's kind of flipping the script mm-hmm. is that, you know, like the more we can start, you know, playing ball with that kind of strategy, like there, we don't, you know, it's to see, you know, how much we can change things yeah. at a state level.
And I guess it's already been happening with like marijuana legalization, yeah. Carbon taxes in some places, electoral reforms in other places. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Praxis. I'm talking with Tim Harreld about the election tomorrow, midterm elections. As he was saying, you know, unprecedented turnout. Very exciting stuff if you're into that kind of thing, which I begrudgingly am. It's been weird. Maybe we can talk about DSA a little bit and just this idea. I know I'm not alone as a person on the left, kind of hanging out on the fringier left most of the time, really not enthused about the Democratic Party in any sense mm-hmm. of the word, very begrudgingly
right.
voting in that way. I hope I'm allowed to say that, voting in that way this time around. And I think, and I've talked to so many people for whom that's the case, because this urgency of like impending fascism is
right.
compelling them to
yeah.
swallow their pride.
I mean, that's why we got the systemic stuff out of the way to talk about first, you know, and that's important stuff in the moment right now. And, I was listening to your show last week, you know, I believe, you know, near the end, you were saying like, you know, these battles are much bigger than just one election, but voting is, you know, if you can pick up a pebble and throw it, like just pick up the pebble because it's there. You know, but I think that there has been the dialogue shifted a lot after Trump was elected, you know, and once, you know, in my experience, like we start our first chapter meeting ever before we were even a chapter was literally the day after Trump was inaugurated, you know, and it was a lot of, you know, it was a lot of disaffected people who ordinarily, you know, we joked for a long time that it was like, it takes a lot to get that many introverted left people into a room together who are typically very turned off by this entire process because we don't feel like we've had, you know, much to vote for, even though a lot of us have been dutifully voting year after year after year. And over the last, you know, year and a half, 2 years, like it's, I think we've learned a lot about how empowering it can be to actually get a lot of people in a room together who have all had a lot of the similar frustrations for a long time, but we've all kind of felt like we were just each individually alone in the wilderness thinking these things. And I think, you know, not going to speak for everybody, but you know, there are plenty of people that have joined DSA specifically because, you know, they went through the experience of watching Bernie Sanders campaign kind of unlock the ability to use the term socialist and anon in a way that, you know, it's like the boogeyman that we grew up with as kids. It's just not there anymore because, you know, we believe in a fairer and more just society. And while we will vote, you know, in these crucial elections to at least kind of like stick the thumb in the dam, there are some bigger, obviously much larger conversations that need to be had. And I think that DSA, you know, at this point, we had, you know, I think the number was about 4,000 members before that election, and we just hit 50,000 nationwide a month and a half ago. So it's, there's obviously an appetite for it. And there will be, by the way, a socialist being elected to Congress, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who unseated a long-term incumbent Democrat, you know, in a very Democratic district in New York City. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting ride, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah, and so obviously, you know, with Ocasio-Cortez, she's in New York City, and it's a different
steps.
Different animal. Yeah, Spokane, Washington, New York City ain't,
yeah,
you know.
Right.
But, however, and the DSA chapter here is relatively nascent, like you said, it, you know, right after the inauguration, so it's still getting its feet under it, setting up standing committees, doing all of that. So it hasn't been really involved in the electoral process this year. But in general, can you talk a little bit about how other DSA chapters have been participating in the electoral process and what that looks like in terms of trying to nudge the Democratic Party or ignore it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the, you know, what gets overlooked a lot about this organization is that it actually is, in the same way that we were talking about the states' rights thing, I mean, it's a decentralized organization that has, you know, individual chapters all over the country, which allows each one of those chapters to kind of work on issues that are, that those chapter members decide are the most important for their city or their state. You know, and depending on the size of the chapter, like trying to get someone elected to Congress, it really just depends on, you know, the amount of members you have, obviously the political terrain, you know, all that stuff that goes into it. But, you know, the thing though is that, like, our number one concern is democracy. And I think that it brings in a lot of people who have felt very shut out from having a democratic say over things, and instead just, you know, being given, as you know, as like Noam Chomsky puts it, like there's one party in the United States, it's the business party. There are two wings of it, and you know, the discourse takes place in there. You're not really afforded much of a democratic say over, you know, over your community, unless you get down to really small, you know, local stuff. But, you know, so within our chapters, I mean, we practice it all the time, and we debate literally everything that we would ever decide to do. And that's true of any chapter nationwide. So if you're a chapter like, you know, Brooklyn or Queens, which we're deeply involved with, the Ocasio-Cortez campaign, you know, that's, if they vote democratically, you know, within the chapter to endorse a candidate, you know, then it's, you know, then that's what that chapter's decided to work on. Whereas, you know, I can speak to, you know, in this city, we have a housing shortage and a homelessness crisis. I mean, that's one of the biggest issues. And then that's sort of a more local issue, although that's increasingly a problem in most major metropolitan areas in the country. But then we also are working on, you know, like Medicare for All, and it's great because it allows different people within the chapters who like want to work on those different things, the flexibility to be able to do that. So, you know, and then we can come back together as a chapter at when we need to do so and vote on whether or not these, you know, like what our priority is going to be. And that's true of every chapter nationwide. So, you know, it's, some pursue electoralism, some are more engaged in sort of, for example, I know the chapter in New Orleans, last year was, they set up a free brake light fixing clinic. You know, they identified that, in a majority African American area, a lot of traffic stops that lead to, you know, police escalation of situations come from simple things like having a brake light out that you know, you might not notice that you had, or you just don't have time. And so they just wanted to address that as a, it was, you know, and so they set up like a car wash, except you can roll in and just get your brake light fixed for free, you know? And that was, and I think that's like, that's what we call good praxis.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I was going to, say that, but you're on it. So, that's rad. Yeah, that's good to understand how that happens. And I guess I'll ask you the same question I asked Jessa about the Republican Party. Do you think that the Democratic Party as an establishment is going to like wake up to this reality that socialism is not a bad word, and that they might in fact win if they expressed a like coherent platform that included things like Medicare for all?
Yeah. And I think that that's, you know, it's like that to me is the conversation that I've had, I think more in the last 2 years with people of really any political stripe, not just Democrats, but I mean, I like Spokane's a very purple place. So you run into, you know, and if you have conversations with, I've had plenty of conversations with conservatives about their sort of their observations of what happens within the Democratic Party. And it's a good, even if we're not going to ultimately agree on a lot, you know, they look at it and they say like, you know, what happened to Bernie mm-hmm. was very suspect and it just didn't make any sense. And if you, you know, if they started running on certain things, like you'd probably get at least, you know, it's the question is there's, as you said in the first half hour, you're talking about the non-voter population of this country, you know, that's, and Jessa Lewis is right, is that like, you know, if non-voter was a party, they would win hands down every election. And so to me personally, the question is, where is that apathy coming from? You know, and what do you do to address it? So, you know, the conversations that I've had with people sort of more center left, like liberals, you know, they'll say, well, you don't want to make, you know, the perfect the enemy of the good. And that's so,
and you can't hear my eye roll over the air. I just realized that
it was loud. And that's, you know, it's like, that's kind of like that attitude. I understand it because again, like we are in a crucial election and like, I'm not going to say don't vote simply because, you know, like for example, like Lisa Brown may have some policies that like, I don't agree with. I'm still going to, you know, I'm going to put my ballot in the mail still. But where do you go down the line? Because there are so many deeply systemic problems that you know, at a certain point require more radical solutions that put more power in the hands of working people to address them. And I think that that's the big conversation because, you know, if the Democratic Party, I think that historically the Democratic Party can be a bit misunderstood because we see what we see right now, which is that it has a lot of corporate influences in it. It's tied to a lot of, you know, money that like big money interests that prevent it from saying, for example, like, you know, we want to create a single payer healthcare system at the national level. Well, if you do that, you know, you're going to stop getting big insurance, health insurance money really quick. And mm-hmm. they're rightly, you know, intimidated by that. And I don't blame them, but like, there's a lot to be gained by making the argument that like you can lose that money, but you will gain voters mm-hmm. and you will gain more people to the party.
And
you know?
Fun bonus, you'll gain a healthcare system that isn't an embarrassment to
yeah.
all of us
right.
Next to the rest of the world. And that like results in thousands of people dying every year.
Right.
Like,
and preventably, you know, yeah. just it's,
I mean, that might not be like the most compelling argument to lead with in that situation from that perspective that you're talking about, but.
Right. Yeah. And so, and to me, that's a healthy dialogue to have. But from my perspective as like, you know, I'm sitting here, I'm 32 years old. My coming of age experience has been, you know, like the formative experiences have been like 9/11 when I was in high school, and then the Iraq War, and then the financial crash, and then Obama getting elected, and feeling that sort of hope that there was going to be a renewal, and then kind of coming out 8 years later and wondering, you know, like, I mean, what was really accomplished then, and what, and if there were things that should have been that weren't, why, like, what are the limitations there and why do they exist? And I think that that's kind of like a conversation that we're all having and we're going to continue to be having. So, it's, you know, I think it's different. People have different, you know, opinions about what the Democratic Party, what the role of it is, mm-hmm. you know, like it, historically it has been before. And, you know, in the 30s, it was a party that, responded very directly to, you know, working class organized pressure to make some very significant, you know, concessions to the working class, like getting rid of, you know, child labor and enacting a 40-hour work week and allowing for unions to exist and thrive. Those are things that the Democratic Party was the avenue through which those happened under the Roosevelt administration. But the flip side is that, you know, a lot of people would argue that those things never would have happened had there not been a, you know, a massive movement to push the party to do that. I mean, mm-hmm. FDR was a patrician. You know, he came out of the elite class, you know, and he was looking at the time, a devastating depression and a lot of unrest. And, you know, and I think that he was under pressure, therefore, to turn to the business class and say, you know, you need to make some concessions here. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you know, capitalism itself isn't even going to survive anymore. So,
yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. Hopefully. I mean, we'll see. Yeah. I mean, we will in a very real way. Sometimes people say that in a facetious way, but we certainly will, and probably very soon. So before we go, we just have a few minutes left, but I just want to make sure that we get in my strongly held feelings on the Spokesman Reviews, the, you know, one and only newspaper in mm-hmm. our fair city for all these, these many years. Their endorsements. I talked with Jessa a little bit about their mischaracterization of her platform in their endorsement of her opponent. And then the one that really upsets me that I just want to air is their lack of an endorsement on the Matt Shea, Ted Cummings race. Matt Shea, if you don't know, is a, what can I say on the radio? He's unhinged, to say the least. He's very extremely far right. He's actually just been outed as like having written this document. It's very extreme. He's getting a lot of national press now. We've all known about him for a long time. The Spokesman editorial basically says like, yeah, he's pretty far out there, but we just don't know about this other guy.
Right.
So I don't know. I guess I just wanted to complain about that publicly, make it known that I read that and I'm not pleased.
I mean, I have not read that yet. So mm-hmm. I will let your complaint.
Let it fly
off into yeah. the, yeah.
Yeah. What else do you want to make sure people know about or pay attention to in like 2 minutes?
I mean, I think I want to piggyback both on what Jessa was saying and the conversation that, you know, you've had in previous weeks that like, first of all, please vote. Like, please vote. It's the simplest thing that you can do right now to make at least sort of a difference, at the very least at a local level. There's initiatives on the ballot. Like, you can vote to support the libraries. Education is at the forefront of, you know, of these efforts going forward. But I think regardless of what happens tomorrow, you know, that your organization is still going to be at the forefront of what happens after tomorrow. You can't let your guard down simply because you filled out a ballot. And the way we look at it is like, you vote because your voice matters, but you organize because these options are still, frankly, insufficient for the challenges that we're going to be facing. I mean, like, I'm not going to get into it obviously in the next 60 seconds, but I mean, there's an IPCC report about the climate. We've got 12 years to have our carbon emissions. Capitalism isn't probably the way that we're going to fix that problem. You know, we have to seriously talk about, you know, regaining democratic control of of a lot of these institutions of power, and that starts, you know, it starts tomorrow, but I mean, it's every day, and it's not something that is just going to happen on its own. And as I think I would leave with, there's the classic socialist saying that it's, you know, the choice at the end of the day is socialism or barbarism, you know, because we're looking at what we've been dealing with for the last 2 years, what happened in Brazil last week. It's a pretty good preview of, you know, of what the alternative here is mm-hmm. The alternative is, you know, these institutions as people are really upset because they're not fulfilling needs. They could, we can reorganize them, but yeah. it's going to take some time.
All right. So, well, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. If you're just joining us at the end of the hour, you've been listening to Praxis on KYRS. If you missed any part of the show and you want to catch it, the first half with Jess Lewis, the second half with Tim Harreld, you can find it by searching Praxis on iTunes, Google Play, anywhere else you get podcasts, or you can go directly to soundcloud.com/praxisradio, PRAXISRADIO. You can always email me with show ideas and more at praxis@kyrs.org. And I'll be back next week with some of the members of Vets for Peace for a Veterans Day special. So have a great day. And like Tim said, go vote.